From the studios of KPCW in Park City, this is The Mountain Life.
I'm Pete Stoughton.
And I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
Whether your mental or physical wellness brings you to the top of the highest peaks,
or you need a little help with the climb,
The Mountain Life, healthy living in the Wasatch.
My guest is former spy turned stay-at-home mom, Christina Hillsburg. She provides a groundbreaking guide to parenting based on her experience as a CIA analyst. She's written a new book about it. It's called License to Parent: How My Career as a Spy Helped Me Raise Resourceful, Self-Sufficient Kids. Now, her unparalleled approach to child rearing provides both an inside look into one of the world's most clandestine organizations, but also it's a practical guide for how to utilize key spy tactics to teach kids important life skills. Christina Hillsburg, welcome to The Mountain Life.
Thanks for having me.
Well, before we get into the spy tactics and how they apply to parenting, which is just the most fabulous and commonsensical approach to parenting, I think, now that I've looked at it, I just have to hear a little bit about how you got into the CIA. The fact that you took on a love for Swahili and that got you into it is just so interesting.
Yes, absolutely. You know, it happened more out of happenstance than any sort of careful planning. I followed something I was very passionate about, which was linguistics and African studies. And I studied Swahili and Zulu at Indiana University. They have a fantastic African language program, and fell in love with the language, the politics, and I couldn't wait to travel to Africa. And I did as a student and studied abroad and doing a Swahili program. And I was recruited on campus by a CIA recruiter. I actually dodged the first interview. I had no idea what government agency it was, just thought it sounded rather boring. All I knew is they wanted foreign language speakers. And I thought, I don't think so. I went to a Ladysmith Black Mambazo concert instead, which, you know, I thought was a lot more fun. And it was fun. And the recruiter ended up staying an extra day to meet with me. And I thought, well, why not? Let me just go see what this is about. It'll be good interview practice, if anything. And he told me he was from the CIA and that the position would, you know, allow me to travel to Africa. I would analyze African politics and African leaders. I could use my foreign language skills. And I was taken. You know, I knew that it sounded like an incredible career. And it's funny because so many people are driven to work for the CIA out of a sense of patriotism for, you know, the US, or a desire to be like James Bond, which was my husband. But for me, it was my love for a foreign land, strangely enough. It was an opportunity to work and travel to Africa. And I relished in it and started a career and fell in love with it. And then, of course, fell in love with my husband.
Oh, that's such a great story. I also did a linguistics degree, and
oh, you did.
I had a little exposure to Swahili, and I thought it was so cool. It, like, what an interesting language, how beautiful it was. What attracted you to Swahili and Zulu?
Well, I learned in high school that I had a knack for languages, but I was incredibly bored in my language classes because, you know, the US, we often start foreign language training very late, in my opinion. I think it is changing in a lot of areas, which is fantastic. But by the time high school it comes around, not a lot of students are interested in it. And the pace was slow for me, and lost my attention quite easily because I wanted to be doing more. And I decided I didn't want to study an Indo-European language. I wanted to study something more interesting. The structure, the syntax. And I was really interested in Swahili, both from a linguistic standpoint and also just by nature of the fact that it is so widely spoken in Africa. And I felt like it would give me more opportunities. Of course, I then later learned Zulu because, my goodness, it's such an interesting language with the clicks, and also a Bantu language. And I learned that one just out of sheer interest and desire to try something new.
Oh, I love it. You were recruited by the CIA. You spent several decades working as a spy. And as you say, you met your husband, Ryan, and he also was a spy, which there's a whole story in that, which is what's kind of fun about your book is it's part memoir, then it's part parenting guide, but with a twist. And so I think if, you know, the lay person were to think of traits that a spy would possess, I would think curiosity, heightened awareness, you know, no room for oblivion, right? And a great sense of personal responsibility. But what are those characteristics and how are you taught them by your CIA training?
So we talk a lot in the book about a variety of skills, and they're from the more physical ones that we learned at the CIA to the softer skills. So you have, of course, things like how to spot and avoid danger, preparing for emergency scenarios, and then you have more of the other skills that you don't immediately think of, like writing, communication, persuasion, technology, those sorts of things. And so one of the ideas that we discuss in the book is that how to spot and avoid danger. And at the CIA, they call it get off the X. And the X can be anything. It can be a person, a place, an environment. And we learn in our training that you are to move away from the X as quickly as possible. The longer that you're on the X, the more unlikely it is that you will get out, you know, the more likely it is that you'll be harmed, I should say. And so we teach that same concept to our kids. I learned it early on in one of my first, we call them TDY assignments, temporary duty assignments to a country in sub-Saharan Africa, where I learned that I should treat every red stoplight as an X. I was not to stop at a red stoplight because smash and grabs and carjackings were very common there. And so I was to roll through them. Of course, this is not a practice that I endorse stateside, but that was an example of getting off the X, you know, not putting yourself in that dangerous situation. And so that is a concept that we have adapted to teach for our kids. And we provide takeaways of what that looks like for parents. And, you know, a lot of that is teaching your kids to listen to their gut, helping them visualize escape routes, emphasizing the urgency that they should respond to alarms and warning signals. You may be surprised to hear that, you know, so many of the survivors of 9/11 took time to delay their departure, sometimes up to 30 minutes because they were, you know, shutting down their computers, changing their shoes. And so we want our kids to respond to something, even if they think it's a drill. You know, they don't have to storm out like George Costanza and Seinfeld and yell fire, you know, they can respond calmly, but with a sense of urgency. And we also talk to them about how it is sometimes appropriate to ignore authority figures, especially in an emergency scenario. We talk about the South Korean ferry boat disaster and how many of the kids who perished on that boat stayed in their rooms because that is what the voice over the intercom told them to do. We want our kids to think critically and realize that even in that situation, they cannot freeze. They need to get off the X, even if that means going against what the orders are.
If you're just joining me on The Mountain Life, my guest is Christina Hillsberg. Her new book is License to Parent, How My Career as a Spy Helped Me Raise Resourceful, Self-Sufficient Kids. Christina, you know, we are at this age where it's become really a problem, an epidemic, where we do everything for our kids. We want our kids to achieve, and so we figure if we sign them up for things and if we help them out and tell them how to do everything and helicopter parent, then they're going to be more successful. And what we do is we end up making kids who aren't very resilient and who don't know something like getting off the X and who certainly are a bit oblivious about the world around them. It's interesting. Someone was saying to me the other day, and you know this because you traveled so extensively, is that travel in and of itself is a way to make kids a little more resilient and have that personal accountability. I'm wondering, you know, we all say to our kids when they leave, oh, you know, be careful out there. What should we be saying to our kids instead?
Well, I hope that everyone will start saying, remember to get off the X, because I know that's what we say to our kids when they leave the house. But it's funny you mentioned travel, because that is a great way to get kids to be more resilient and even more self-sufficient. One of the things that with my toddlers, when we've traveled, I actually make them carry their own luggage. I will not be carrying my kids through the airport. They will be walking and they will be carrying everything they want on that plane and on that trip on their back. So they better choose wisely. And so, I mean, I felt so proud of them to see a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old carrying their backpacks through the airport. That's a great example of, you know, giving your kids that responsibility and not just doing it for them. And sometimes I think it can be so easy, especially with little kids, to do it for them, especially in public, because we don't want to deal with the tantrum. We don't want to deal with, you know, the result of them not getting to do what they want to do. But I would just encourage parents to push through, because you're helping them in the end by giving them that responsibility. And even, you know, our oldest daughter, she's 18. She's been on an epic road trip the past 2 weeks because she graduated early and she has been driving all over from here. She actually went down through Utah and down through Southern California and all the way up, and she's doing it all by herself. And I'm so proud of her. And it is really this security awareness and all of these skills that she's been learning her whole life that has set her up to have the ability to do this and to do it on her own.
So this is a great question. And I just want to mention that when you married Ryan, he had 3 kids of his own. Since then, you've had 2 more, the 2 and 4-year-old, I assume.
That's right.
And so for the 18-year-old, this is big. You know, when we send our kids out, they've had driver's ed, which we know from the amount of people that drive in the left-hand lane, in the fast lane, going slow, that, you know, driver's ed doesn't do a lot for us. So how did you prepare her, for example, knowing how to change a tire, and what kinds of things does she have that she carry along with her in the car?
So she is equipped with the grown-up version of the adventure bag that we start with our toddlers, and it becomes an emergency go bag. So she, of course, has all of the necessary emergency tools in her vehicle. But I think one of the most important things that she has is the skill of being aware of her surroundings. And one of the ways that we talk about that in the book, we talk about CIA surveillance detection routes and the skills and training that we've learned at the CIA and the way that we've adapted it to our kids. One of those ways is through driving. And when our kids first get their permits and they first go behind the wheel, what Ryan first does is he takes them to an empty parking lot and they spend about 2 hours driving backwards, not driving forwards, only backwards. And the idea is that, you know, if you do that, if you can drive in reverse, well, then driving forward will be a lot easier. And there's a lot of backwards driving that goes on at the CIA, at the farm. Ryan will tell you that he was the best backwards driver. He's very proud of this. I am, on the other hand, the worst. And my 4-year-old has already realized that and let me know that daddy needs to teach mommy some reverse skills. And so that's one of the things that we do, or that Ryan does rather, with the kids when they start driving, and also teaching them to merge. Like the very first time they're behind the wheel on that same day, he's taking them onto the interstate. You know, that's something that I didn't do for several driver's ed lessons. And it became this intimidating thing for me. And they go right in with him. And the idea behind this being that the better they are at driving and these capabilities, the more awareness they will have of what's going on around them. If they're so focused on their driving and not knowing how to reverse well and not being good at these other things, they can't see everything that's going on. They can't have good security awareness, good situational awareness. And so we're you know, buckling down on those driving skills so that they have the ability to observe their surroundings.
Times have changed with the emergence of this little smartphone. You know, it used to be when I was young and I was doing the backpacking around and I would land in a new country or a new city, and it really maybe gave me so much confidence to figure out where I was, figure out which way, north, south, east, west, and just have that awareness of the layout of the new city or wherever it is. But we don't really have that anymore because our heads are stuck. All we have to do is pull up our Google Maps and it figures this out for us. How do we keep that, and how do we nurture that directional, you know, kind of awareness in our children?
Yeah, we want to expose our kids to those basic skills that we've lost for the exact reason you've said. We've relied on technology so much, and, you know, the CIA can be very technologically advanced, but when it comes to clandestine operations, you know, a lot of times it's down to the basics, right? You have to consider, if you have a cell phone on you, that you could be tracked. You're going to meet an asset. And so there are various types of operational security things that you have to consider. And so you learn how to, you know, study a city, you know, the map beforehand, familiarize yourself with all of the basics without your cell phone, without using Google Maps. And so in that same vein, we teach our kids how to use maps, how to be aware of, you know, basic navigational skills of where the sun rises and, you know, being able to navigate their way back home. And that's done through a lot of different ways and can be appropriate for different age ranges. I mean, you can start it even with babies. You know, it's amazing how much kids are taking in before they're even verbal. You know, you can narrate things to them in the car. Oh, we're passing the farm with the cows on the right. We're, you know, teaching them landmarks, helping them to navigate. And when they ask for things, like my 18-year-old did when she was 16, which was, what's the address for Nana's house? And I looked at her and said, well, you've driven there how many times? What do you mean, what's the address? And she said, well, what is it? And I said, are you going to put this in your GPS? And she's like, no. And I said, I'm not giving you the address. You've been there. You've used your Google Maps every time, haven't you? And she said, yes. And I said, I will tell you the interstates that you have to take. I will write it down on a piece of paper for you. Go. And, you know, it's giving them those opportunities and forcing them into the discomfort, even when they would rather just use Google Maps. It's giving them the opportunity to learn and find their way.
This is just so, so important. Well, let's talk about the obvious thing that you learned in the CIA that we want to pass on to our kids in terms of physical safety and self-defense.
Well, you know, we hope that by getting off the X, they won't find themselves in a fight for their life scenario, right? That's the hope and the goal. But of course, you know, things happen and we want to prepare our kids for the worst case scenario, which we really believe that the CIA does in its training. You know, they train you for these really difficult scenarios, hoping that what you encounter in life will be much easier. So we take that same approach with our kids. And when we talk about self-defense, we emphasize the fragility of the human body with them because they can watch a movie and see a fight scene where someone goes up against someone two or three times their size or multiple people and the person walks away, you know, maybe with a couple scratches, but they're alive and they're fine. We will pause the movie and say, this is not realistic. This will not happen. Sometimes people, you know, can die from one punch. You know, it's, we want them to understand that there's a reason for weight classes in wrestling. You know, these are things that they really need to understand the importance so that also they understand that's why it is important to get off the X if at all possible, right? And if they can't, this is where we get to the run, hide, fight. And that's a similar training that you can see in like an active shooter scenario in the private sector. You know, if they can't run, if they can't get off the X, they should hide. And if they can't hide, then they fight. And if they fight, they fight as if their life depends on it. And they can use anything as an equalizer. It does not have to be a weapon, a traditional weapon. They can use a chair to throw at someone. They can use a pen. They can use a lamp. You know, teaching your kids to have that awareness and the ability to act and not freeze in an emergency to protect themselves is so important.
What do you think about stranger danger? It's interesting. Even, you know, someone like me, a middle-aged woman, I see kids who I say hi to and they will not say hi back. And it just makes me think that their parents have taught them to not speak to any strangers whatsoever.
Well, it's interesting because when you look at the statistics of, you know, the chances of like someone taking your child from your front yard, a stranger, it's extremely low. There's this fantastic author, Lenore Eskenazi, and she's written a book called Free Range Kids. And she discusses this in her book, like the chances of that actually happening are so low, but because we are in such a connected world, you know, we hear about instances like this so often. And so we think that they're more common than they actually are. And so, you know, by equipping our kids with some of these skills to protect themselves, I think we can feel at ease, you know, in those types of scenarios. But of course, I do include a story in the book of when I was at the park with my 2 and 4 year old, and we were being circled by a very shady character on a bike, on a bicycle. And my gut was saying, get out of here. And, you know, of course, with toddlers, you have to be careful in a situation like that, because that's the tantrum stage, you know, and if they think they're not ready to leave the park and you're all of a sudden not preparing them and you're saying, we have to go. So I had to really think on my feet and say, you know, we've got to just run to the car and I've got something for you in there. And because I was in this mindset of, I don't know what this man is doing. He's circled us 3 times. Something is telling me something's wrong. And my daughter was small enough and on a little wooden bike that I was able to kind of just pick her up and carry her. And my son, you know, thankfully listened, was able to ride his own bike at the time. And we made it in the car. I ended up calling the police, and the man actually was definitely suspicious, and they had gotten multiple calls about him and was a drug addict and up to, you know, nefarious things in the park. And I was glad that I had called, you know, but as a mom, I had actually questioned even my judgment. I got to the car and thought, did I overreact? I'm sure, you know, there's no reason to call. And I actually waited 30 minutes before I called. And when the police officer said, well, I wish you would have called earlier. You know, we've gotten several calls about this person and I just made a stop, and, you know, definitely call right away. But there's this fear that you don't want to be considered like the overreacting mom. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I actually even said on the phone, you know, I worked at the CIA, like, this is weird. I know something's off. I'm not overreacting. It's that fear of being judged, you know, but, you know, just like we tell our kids they need to listen to our gut, we do too. And so when I found out that, yeah, you know, I don't know what his intentions were, and I can't verify that, but he was an erratic individual. His behavior was odd. And, you know, when the police officer said, yeah, he was up to some nefarious things, I felt, you know, both a relief for calling, but also just like, wow, you know, that was a real instance. And Ryan assured me, well, you got off the X, you did exactly what you were supposed to do. But we hope that we don't find ourselves in that situation, right? Because it can be scary.
Well, we're just about out of time. I'm speaking with former spy turned stay-at-home mom, Christina Hillsberg. Boy, I could talk to you all day. But I wanted to ask you one last thing about sizing up people that we see. You know, you sized up the guy circling you, and maybe it was obvious because he was circling you. I think, you know, most people who have an awareness about their surroundings would pick up on that. But what do you think about, you know, you're walking down a street anywhere. How do you teach kids how to size up people without being overly, you know, judgmental or biased or any of those things?
Well, we want our kids to start recognizing features of people so that they can remember their faces. We want them to look at people. And, you know, at the CIA, when we're talking about being followed, you would never turn around and look at the person who's following you. But in real life, you would. You turn around, it's disarming. Look them in the eyes, get a description. And not just for people, but also for vehicles. You know, if something happens, you want to be able to describe that vehicle. There was an instance in the news just in the past week of a road rage incident where, you know, a family with several kids, ages like 2 to 11, were in a car and they were shot at someone on the interstate. And it was the 11-year-old who memorized the license plate. And that is why they were able to arrest the suspect, which is just an incredible skill by an 11-year-old. And so that's something that we hope that all of our kids will have the ability to do.
That 11-year-old might find themselves getting recruited by the CIA, just like you did.
Oh, that's right. We need people like that.
Yeah. Well, it has been a pleasure speaking with you, Christina Hillsberg. Her book, License to Parent, How My Career as a Spy Helped Me Raise Resourceful, Self-Sufficient Kids. What a great book. Thank you so much, Christina.
Thanks, Lynn.
Thanks for tuning into this episode of The Mountain Life.
If you enjoyed the show, make sure you subscribe, rate us, and leave us a comment.
If you have an idea for a future show, email us at mountainlife@kpcw.org.
We hope you'll bring your green smoothie and join us next week for The Mountain Life.